Open Floor is brought to you by FreshBooks. It's smart mobile accounting designed specifically for freelancers and small business owners. You can try FreshBooks for 30 days on us with no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section.
I don't want to say who could be me, and I'm not sure who. I don't want to say I could be anybody. I don't want to say anybody could beat me. I think it'd be really good. I think there's like five guys that are like the best, I would say, one-on-one in that position in the league. And I think it'd be a battle at the top if they had the type of event. I think I could make the roster. Steph Curry, the last shot he took to beat Oklahoma City was a tie game. He pulled up two steps inside of half court. You know, if anybody else takes that shot and misses it, maybe they get criticized or, you know, they could have got closer. He only needed 1 point. But for him, he's proven he can do it time and time again. We see him practice those shots.
Hi, everyone. This is Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated. Welcome to another episode of Open Floor, where every week we go inside the journeys of NBA players and coaches. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show one of the most entertaining players you'll ever see. The pride of the Emerald City, the king of the crossover, the LA Clippers' Jamal Crawford. We're going to talk to Jamal about the Clips, the Warriors, crazy shots, Seattle hoops, LA fitness runs, and what it feels like to get unbelievably hot. Jamal, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Lee, how you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Pleasure to talk to you.
Well, hey, I mean, you had another big game against the Nets last night. You had 26, and you've had a bunch of them lately. And it made me think, I mean, there are some guys in the league, when they get hot, there's just really nothing like it. And you're one of them. And I've always wondered if you know when that kind of outbreak is coming.
It's weird, Lee, because I don't necessarily know when it's coming. But once I'm in the moment, I know it's there, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know beforehand, like, hey, this is going to be a big night. Or, you know, some of the best nights in pregame, I'm like, oh, man, I feel great. And I have some of the toughest shooting nights. And sometimes in pregame, I'm just okay. You know, and then I make a lot of shots in the actual game. So, you know, I think I don't know when it's coming, but I know when I'm in that moment. And my teammates know and my coaches know. And they all do an excellent job of helping me stay in that moment. And I think it's better for our team.
So will it be like after one make or after two makes? Or is there a kind of make that makes you realize you're getting into it?
I think after just seeing the ball go through, that could be a free throw. It could be a layup. It could be anything. But then the following shot, once I see that one go in, I'm like, okay, I'm on it. I'm ready to go. You know, and it's almost like a switch goes off or goes on. It turns on. And from that one point or one free throw or one layup, that can turn into 10, 20 straight points, you know, and that's always fun to be a part of.
So how do you keep yourself there? Because it could just be a shot and then it could mean nothing, right? Or it could mean a shot that's going to lead to a bunch of shots.
Yeah, it's something special, something, you know, to say about it. And I always tell, you know, especially Blake and Chris at different times, you know, if any of us are kind of struggling a little bit or haven't got a game going yet, you know, if it's a technical foul to be shot out, make sure Chris shoots it, you know, because he'll get that one, then he makes a score after that. And those 3 points can turn to 10, you know, and then he's rolling. Blake, you know, he can miss 4 or 5 shots in a row at a certain point and kind of get down, and then he can hit one, and that turns to 7 shots in a row. You know, I've seen both of those guys do it, and I'd like to think I can, you know, have the ability to do it as well. And I've always kind of been like that, you know, I've had the ability to score in bunches, you know, so for me, just that one shot, you know, can turn me on.
That's interesting. So you can tell when it's happening even to somebody else? Like, you can tell when it's coming for Chris or when it's coming for Blake?
Yeah, I can. I can. And playing with those guys now for 4 years, I can see it, you know, and we go out of our way if there's a defensive 3 seconds or something. Just that 1 point, just seeing that ball go through, it can turn you off, you know what I mean? Sometimes you get turned off from somebody talking trash or, you know, a big play happening in the course of a game. So seeing those little things get turned on, it can really make something magical happen.
Is the hottest you've ever been the game when you were with the Knicks, the 52-point game where you made the 16 straight, or is it like summer league stuff nobody sees?
That, you know what's special about that game? I've had 53 different times, but that game, I've never been as hot in the NBA for as long a period of time. I missed my first 4 shots that game. You know, so it was looking like a rough start. you know, I made one and just kept going. And I think I went 2.5 quarters, almost 3 quarters without missing a shot. And like, when I had 52, I came out with 7 minutes to go in the game. So that could have easily been, you know, a 60, 65-point game that game.
Yeah, because you only played, I think, 39 minutes total in that game or something.
Yeah. And it's weird because if you check the game before, we played the Phoenix Suns. In the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter of that game, I had 23. So it was kind of building up, you know. So that was like 75 points over a 47-minute span.
And then apart from the NBA, I mean, I'm sure you've had summer league games and stuff to where I think you had like 120-point or something summer league game. I mean, games when you probably just felt like you could throw up anything and it was going in.
Yeah, I had 118, actually. And at that point, you're just looking for space. It doesn't matter what the defense is doing. It doesn't matter if you're on balance. You just need to get a look at the basket. And if you get a look, you feel like it's going in. And you feel like you're just in rhythm. You're in the zone, so to speak. And once you find that spot, I don't think anybody can do anything about it.
I mean, it seems like they're – you know, the NBA doesn't really allow a player to do that very often, right? I mean, you have to be either a certain kind of superstar or you have to show that you're so hot to get that kind of rope, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're absolutely right. Or you have to be proven, you know, that you prove you can do that. You're capable of those type of nights. And then, you know, you have to have the right coach who's like, hey, you know what, I'm not going to tell him too much on offense to try to confuse him. You have to have the right teammates saying, we got to get this guy the ball. You have to set good screens for them. And when you're in that moment, it's not just you in that moment. If you watch guys on the sidelines who haven't played maybe all game, they're into it. They're jumping up and down. Guys on the court are smiling and high-fiving you. So everybody's playing a part in it.
You watch League Pass probably as much as any player.
Oh, my gosh. All the time. Yeah. All the time.
Do you flip around? Who do you watch? Like, what kind of dictates your League Pass decisions?
I watch pretty much everybody, honestly. I really do. I'm watching everybody. I watch the most random game. It could be a game that's not as entertaining. I'll still watch it. I'll go to LA Fitness in the summer and just watch sometimes, and I won't play. I'm just always feeling things, looking at different things, and what was in this person's mindset for them to do this particular thing at that particular time. So I'm always just watching it and watching the league, seeing the best players in the world every night.
I was kind of following you, watching on Twitter the other night with that Oklahoma City-Golden State game, and you know, you're watching Curry and you're tweeting about him. And those are probably experiences that he's having that you've had all the time, either in the league or in the summer. When you see the freedom like that he's playing with, do you think that is kind of a system giving him that freedom? Is he seizing it? Like, what are you seeing kind of, because it must just be a blend of a team trusting him and then a guy playing with tons of confidence.
It's a combination of everything, to be honest. It's a combination of, I've never seen somebody so free on a basketball court. When I say that, I mean not just him shooting the ball and the way he's shooting it, but his teammates, right? I'm sure at some point when guys got it going, I've been through it. You know, even when they got it going, at some point, a guy's like, on your team, like, oh, that was a tough shot. Maybe you should have passed that one. You never see that with Steph. You know, you see his coaches, his teammates, the fans, everybody pulling the same direction for him. So he doesn't have the conscience of, oh, this is a tough shot. Because make no mistake, some of the shots are tough shots, technically. And he doesn't have that burden on him of, oh, if I miss, they're going to look at me like, oh, I should have passed that one. He's completely free on the basketball court. It's almost like he's out there by himself, so to speak. I know he's playing within a team concept, but he has the freedom, like, hey, there's no, you know, repercussion or somebody's going to say, hey, pass the ball or any of that. You know, he's a great guy off the court as well, so I'm sure, you know, he's a people pleaser, so to speak, and he doesn't want, you know, make any waves. So when you have that kind of freedom, they're like, no, go for it. Go be as great as you can be. And, you know, I think that feels good. You're playing a whole different game, so to speak, even for guys that are unconscious. You're playing a game even more so different than that.
Have you ever had that kind of freedom?
Not like that. I mean, I've had freedom, and I still have freedom to this day, but not to the point, even I'll take a shot and I'm like, ooh, you know, or maybe in the past, teammates would be like, hey, I was open over here. Hey, you know, you can work around it, you know, get a better shot. So not completely like that. I've never even seen it. Even guys like Iverson and Kobe are some of the greatest scorers ever. I'm sure once upon a time, one of their teammates was like, hey, you know, I'm just over here in the corner or whatever, you know, and everybody goes through it. 99% of people went through it, but I haven't seen that with Steph, and that's what makes this whole process with him special.
Is that why you make so many shots, end of shot clock, end of half? Is that part of what's happening there? Is that freedom? because, you know, you're just trying to get up as good a shot as you can. Does that kind of explain why you're so effective in those situations, is because you do have that freedom there?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's definitely part of it. You know, and at the end of the day, like Steph, he actually has to make the shot, you know, so he's doing the work for sure. But the chemistry of his team, his coaching staff, and the confidence they have in him to go ahead and provide those moments, those sparks, because you see it all the time. A guy can hit a shot at half court or into the court and the crowd gets into it. So those 2 or 3 points right there can turn into 20 because the momentum's going down. The crowd's awoke. You know, they're up, they're energized now. That one shot could have put his team like, hey, here we go. We need that shot. You know, you see it all the time. It can change the course and direction of a game. And most of the time, it works for the team's favor.
I mean, there's so much conversation now about good shots, bad shots, efficient shots. Do you get in points where it feels like there's no bad shot?
Yeah, I think it's a fine line because, and I wrote about this on the Players Tribune, I think a tough shot for player A could be considered a bad shot. May not be a tough shot or a bad shot for player B. Perfect example, Steph Curry, the last shot he took to beat Oklahoma City was a tie game. He pulled up two steps inside of half court. You know, if anybody else takes that shot and misses it, maybe they get criticized or, you know, they could have got closer. You only needed 1 point. But for him, he's proven he can do it time and time again. We see him practice those shots before the game. So for him, that's not a tough shot. That was actually an easy shot because the defense wasn't set. He walked up, took his time, dribbled right into a rhythm shot. You know, so it all depends on who's taking that shot and you know, how capable they are of making that shot.
So like your 4-point plays that happen all the time, is that practiced or is that just it's just a play that just something that can happen and you're just such a good shot maker, you're able to do it through contact?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I honestly think I shoot when people least expect it. You know, I think Reggie Miller was more known something like the leg kick. You know, he kicked out his leg a little bit. For me, I think I shoot when people don't expect it. So by the time they react, I'm already in shooting motion. So when that contact comes, I've already got a follow through on, and then the ball's already gone.
You had sort of a, you know, just to go back in time a little bit, you know, obviously kind of a different developmental path, you know, with given your high school experience and everything else. Did you learn to play at the park or did you learn to play in a more formal setting? Like, how did this kind of, you have such an, you know, such a different and improvisational game. Like, where did that begin?
Yeah, I think honestly, if I was a boxer, I'd be Mayweather as far as just a counter punching. Like sometimes I'll do a move just to get somebody to react. You know, like I'll do something just to get them to react and I'll react off what they do. So I'm always countering off what they do, you know? So the way I look at it is my game's a lot off of instinct and reaction. So if I don't know what I'm going to do when I have the ball, there's no way the defense can know. You know, most of it came from just playing basketball all the time, playing pickup, playing with grown people when I was a kid, playing, but it all came from playing basketball because I've always was taught, like, you know, drills are excellent to do and you need to do those for repetition and for muscle memory. But at the end of the day, those drills have to transfer over to basketball and play 5-on-5. So I'm always doing that and I'm always comfortable in my settings. And I think the way of training I've done has always been a little bit different than what most people have done. And, you know, so far it's worked pretty well for me.
How so? You mean just through more game action than like formal drill stuff?
Yeah, I think more game action. I think in the summer, not taking any time off playing basketball all the time. I know guys who don't touch a basketball until right before training camp or don't play 5-on-5 until training camp. So for me, I'm always sharp, you know, as far as basketball. I'm always in a basketball rhythm. You know, I'm always playing. Even on the All-Star break, I played 4 out of 5 days. So I'm always something to stay in basketball rhythm. And I think it makes it a lot easier. You know, so it's almost like if you got a job, right, and you had to leave your home for 9 months and you came back and you turned on the light, that light will start popping and you may explode. My muscles are always firing because they're always in basketball shape, you know, so I don't get a lot of those injuries. I'm always kind of, you know, keep the car running, so to speak. I don't not drive the car for 6 months and then try to start it up and it's dead. You know, I'm always kind of firing. I think that's kind of helped my training method.
How do you get pickup games? Like if you're over the break or over the summer when guys aren't playing as much, how do you find that action?
Oh, I play against anybody. I play against high schoolers. I play against guys with regular 9-to-5 because at the end of the day, it's not about them. It's about what I'm trying to accomplish. You know, maybe I say, okay, I'm just going to go left the whole day or maybe I'll just shoot bank shots all day, or maybe I'll just take one-legged shots all day and get the cardio in and still keep my hammer sharp. You know, so it's not about what they're doing. It's about different things I'm trying to work on. So I can play with anybody and get something out of it.
So you're seriously rolling up with guys who are 9 to 5, just regular schmoes?
Oh, man. You should go through my Twitter and see some of my favorites. Like, guys are like, hey, we just playing with Jay Cross over at LA Fitness. Like, that's a normal occurrence for me in high school. I played with my high school team over the break. And I even took Isaiah Thomas there, and we worked out with our my high school team as well over the All-Star break. And he came, she's a hoop head like I am, so he came straight from the All-Star game. It was playing back in my high school the next day.
So I was at a store with Brandon Jennings around the lockout, and he let me go with him to all these regular parks, and he was playing against guys like that. And it, you know, it was fun to watch, but it's obviously kind of a joke. Like, do you give them the full Jamal Crawford treatment, or how do you approach that? Like, when you're playing against a guy who obviously has no business being on the floor with you.
Yeah, no, I won't just embarrass him like that. I may be more of a passer. You know, I just shoot shots from deeper. Different things like that. And then, you know, if somebody gets out there and starts talking, then I'll give them a Crawford moment, I guess.
So you're not pulling up from 40 feet on them, or are you?
No, not full speed. But, you know, some guys, they want to prove themselves as well. They want to go back to their families and friends and say, you know, they played against such and such. So they'll come with it, and then you have to just turn up the cooker just a little bit just to show the difference.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more from Jamal Crawford. Every great team has a strong support system to back them up. The same goes for your business, and FreshBooks is here to help. For the best way to manage your books and make tax season easy, get FreshBooks, a super intuitive tool that makes creating and sending invoices extremely simple for freelancers and small business owners. FreshBooks stands out where it really counts, getting you paid. You can create and send professional invoices in just 30 seconds. You'll see exactly when your client looked at the invoice you've emailed, tracking the status of all your outstanding invoices for you. FreshBooks can even send late payment reminders to your clients automatically, which means you're not wasting time chasing down and fighting clients for payment. The results speak for themselves. FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster on average. Don't just take my word for it. Right now, FreshBooks is offering my listeners 30 days of unrestricted use totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. Just go to FreshBooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. I'd like to welcome SI.com's Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver, two guys with a real passion and knowledge of the game, to the Sports Illustrated Podcast Network. They'll be joining me as a part of the Open Floor podcast team. And if you're already subscribed to Open Floor, you can find them right on the same feed. If not, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, and you can find more great Sports Illustrated podcasts at si.com/podcasts. Before high school, you moved from Seattle to LA. Were you at that point, were you the player you kind of are, or was there, because you didn't play high school ball, I don't think, in LA when you got here. Where were you as a player then?
I was always the same player, honestly. My game's always been the same. So I've always done the same things. I just developed it more as I went along, and I knew why I was doing certain things. Like, and now I have a foundation of moves I can go to, you know, just to get guys to react or what I'm looking for in certain spots or certain periods. So before, I didn't understand why I was doing stuff, but the game was always the same.
So when you get out, were you planning on playing at Dorsey right away, and then things just kind of went sideways on you?
Yeah, I was. I actually was. My dad went to Dorsey, and he played there. And then he went to Oregon, actually. Yeah. Played with Kevin Love's dad, Stan Love. And so, you know, I planned on playing there right from the start. And I actually made varsity as a freshman, so the talent was always there.
And was it grades that got in the way, or was it just sort of the scene there that you got caught up in?
It was some of everything, to be honest with you. I think it was the scene there. I wasn't as focused on class as I should have been. You know, so then from there, I wasn't going to class. I was hanging with the wrong crowd. And then I got ineligible. Like I said, I made varsity. But it just, from that point, I just wasn't as serious as I should have been in the classroom, and that carried over as far as the basketball as well.
And then you moved home back to Seattle. Did you worry that it was kind of getting away from you, that you might not be able to play college basketball? You might just sort of be one of those playground legends?
Well, I knew in Seattle, like, that was going to be my moment as far as, because I never wanted to move to LA. I wanted to stay in Seattle with my mom and the rest of my family the whole time. And my dad, my grandmother were the only ones in LA. So Seattle was always my comfort zone. But I knew at that point, with how I had done in school, like, I was like, okay, if you're really going to be serious about this, you got to get it now as far as grades. Because basketball is always serious about, but it was like I was just this player nobody knew, because I was just in the backyards playing AAU for the most part until, you know, I came back to Seattle, and that's when things really took off. Starting with, I was like 50 Cent dropping a mixtape. And when I came back playing everywhere, like every playground. And everybody's like, man, you see Jabari's back. He's tall. You know, because I was a point guard when I left, so I was really short. I came back, I was 6'4", but I still had the same handles, the same everything. I was athletic, and, you know, I was this tall guard now. So I was making my name around town. Then I started playing, you know, for my high school in the summer first. And then I was doing really well. And then I got invited to the Christie Summer League. And that's when things really took off, because now I'm playing against pro players. And after the first couple of games, I averaged 30 points the rest of the way. I'm playing with Dana Stoudemire and Sean Kemp and playing with Doug Christie. And that's when everybody's like, okay, this is for real. We can do this. And it all happened so fast.
So junior year, you never played a high school game, right, going in. And yet everybody knew you.
Everybody knew me in Seattle at that point, because before that, like I said, the summer league and playing all over town, the buzz just kind of created. You know, and then the summer league really took it over the top.
What kind of stuff were you doing on the court when you got back there in high school?
Man, you know, honestly, when people think I'm flashy or fancy now, I toned it down so much. Like, I was trying to embarrass anybody that's guarding me. Like, now I just do, you know, I score, I do what's needed for the team. I was trying to embarrass everybody that's guarding me every single possession. So I remember one time, this on tape, I have to get this tape, actually. I dribbled up backwards with full court pressure through my legs the whole way. So imagine walking backwards. Imagine walking backwards with pressure, full court through your legs, walking all the way from one baseline to the three-point line. When I got to the three-point line, in one motion, I turned around, touched the ground with my left hand, threw the ball over my neck with my right hand, shot a three-pointer, and turned around before it went in. I was already running back down the run court. The crowd lost it. They lost it. They absolutely lost it.
And like Sonics are coming out.
Somehow get that video so you can see this. Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody's put that on YouTube or anything.
Right. And there's only one person that has the video. Actually, Kid Sensation, he's a rapper in Seattle. He's the rapper for Sonics. He has the video. So I have to see if he can find it in his archives. But yeah, no, when that makes YouTube, I was doing the no look shot, I guess, 20 years ago.
And like Gary was coming out and Sonics were coming out just to see a high school kid, right?
Oh, yeah. So imagine this, Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, right? These guys are two of the biggest stars, not just in Seattle, but in the NBA world period at the time, you know? And so they're like, the buzz had become so great that these NBA guys, these NBA superstars, are coming to my high school games all the time, you know? And then I start working out with them at 16, 17 years old. I'm in the country, so I'm working out with them and doing well, like doing really well. So these guys, even before I got to the facility, I was, you know, playing around town. These guys were coming to all my games, and it was just amazing.
So is there kind of pressure there that you can't just score and play well? You also had to put on this crazy show.
But you know what? Honestly, it was okay for me, because the way I play is aesthetically pretty cool to see, I think.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, like, doing anything out the ordinary for me. It was just a natural occurrence for me. I was just playing.
So how hard was it to go from that style and playing like you did in the summer to the kind of structure that you would have in the Big Ten, in the NBA, as you go through with your career? How does a kid kind of adapt to that?
Well, I think that's one of the things that's pretty cool about me, is that I can adjust, you know, and I think that's the true testament to how a player is. You know, I've had 17 different coaches in 16 years. I've only had, I've only had, and think about that. So every coach sees you differently, right? Every coach, one may say you're a point guard, one may say you're a two guard, one may say you're a starter, one may say you need to come off the bench. So, you know, you see some guys in systems for 7, 8, 9 years. I've had different coaches, different systems. I've only played for the same coach back-to-back years twice in my career, once with Isaiah in New York, I believe, and that was Quick, and then now with Doc. So, you know, with that, you have to adjust. But, you know, I haven't had any problem doing that. And I think just being a good basketball player, you can do whatever is asked of you. You know, some guys that start can't come off the bench. You know, some guys that come off the bench can't start. I've had the luxury to be able to do both, you know, and I think that's pretty cool.
When did you sort of accept or even embrace that six-man role?
Well, and after New York and after Golden State, I've been in the league for 10 years. And I hadn't been to the playoffs. And at a certain point, you know, no matter whose fault it is, you get known as a good player on bad teams. And I didn't want that label. So I'm like, you know what? I care about winning so much. I'll do whatever. I'll come off the bench. It doesn't matter. And think about it, I've never come off the bench for my life. I'm like, I'll come off the bench. I will. So I go to Atlanta, and they already had their starting five in place. They already been to the playoffs. They have Mike Bibby. They have Joe Johnson, Josh Smith, Al Horford, Marvin Williams. They've had their starters for a couple of years now. Been to the playoffs. So I understand. And Coach Woodson brings me in. He's like, hey, I'm going to bring you off the bench. I'm like, okay, no problem. He's like, but you can still lead the league and score off the bench. I'm like, okay. The first game, you can look it up. I had 3 points. I was like, man, this feels weird. The crowd's probably like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? He's weak now. He's come off the bench. And I knew the whole year I was coming out, the whole summer I was coming off the bench. So that summer working out, I wouldn't even, like, you know, when you play a game in the summer, pick up, I would wait to play the second game just so I can get used to coming off, you know, when guys were, you know, starting the pickup run. And I had set my mind for it. I'm like, okay, I can do this. But then it still felt weird. But by the end of the year, I'd average 18 points. Won sixth man of the year. We won 50-something games, went to the playoffs, and that was my first year coming off the bench.
How do you prepare yourself for it? Like, when you're going in, is there anything you can do to sort of get yourself loose? Because a lot of times it's like you come in and you're shooting right away. How do you warm up for that?
Well, I try to go really hard and lay up in the layup line just to get a nice sweat. But then you're sitting for maybe another 15 or 20 minutes after that. So I try to stretch as much as possible while I'm loose, you know, warmed up after the layup line. While I'm on the bench, I'm just mentally checking in the game. Even when I'm not out there, I'm watching how they're playing certain things with the pick and roll or what they're doing on this possession or what they're doing, the defense is doing. So I've been trying to get an advantage mentally. When I get in, you know, I already know what they're going to do and try to adjust to that. I think if you look at the really good teams, the Spurs, Ginobili, you know, the Dallas, they had Jason Terry, OKC had James Harden. You have all these great players off the bench, and it gives your team balance. You know, and you can't have all your best players out there at one time. So for the last 4 years since I've been with the Clippers, if you look at it, cumulatively, myself, Blake, and Chris have been the top, you know, scorers. Well, having those two out there, obviously they're going to start as superstars. And you do well when they come out the game. You know, we don't take a big drop-off scoring-wise because they can get a rest. I can come in and do my thing, and the bench can come in and do our thing, and hopefully we can increase the lead so they can get more rest and they're fresher in the fourth quarter.
Well, Dave asked you so much for instant offense, and I asked you earlier what it feels like when you kind of know it's there, but what about when you know it's not? Or, you know, what about when it feels like it's not one of those nights? How do you respond then?
You have to do other things. You have to make, you know, plays easier for your teammates. Doc always asks, if your number one thing is taken away, how do you help the team? How can you still help the team? And so we have to ask that of ourselves. And when my scores are up there, you know, I have to get guys the ball. I still attract two people and then make a play easier for them. I have to do different things on defense, try to get some steals, try to be in the right spot defensively, and then get to the free throw line. You can always do that. And I think with my handle, I can always, you know, get to the free throw line and get easy baskets there just to get me on track or maybe slow a run down the team is having to slow the game down.
I've always thought they should have like a one-on-one deal in the All-Star game as part of All-Star weekend. If they had that, who would beat you or who could beat you?
Oh, I don't want to say who could beat me. I'm not sure who. I don't want to say I could beat anybody. I don't want to say anybody could beat me. I think it'd be really good. I think there's like five guys who are like the best, I would say, one-on-one in that position in the league. And I think it'd be a battle at the top if they had the type of event. I think I could make the roster.
Okay, so who would be the best, if they had that event, who would be the best feel? Like, what would be the feel you'd want to see?
The feel, I think Curry's in there. I think Durant, Melo, I believe. I think Melo, Durant, Curry, Kyrie Irving would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think myself. Oh, Kobe. I got to put Kobe just because Kobe. And Kobe, I'll take myself. I'll put Kobe. I don't have to be there. I'll be the sixth man there, I guess.
I mean, there's so much. It's a team game, obviously. And I mean, more than ever, it's a ball movement game. But when you're watching it, do you still love those one-on-one battles?
Yeah, for sure. Because at the end of the day, it's kind of like a mano-a-mano, right? It's like, at the end of the day, if you look at after the ball movement or after a play, I'll say not so much the ball movement, after a play breaks down, it ends 90% of the time in the NBA in pick and roll or in isolation. So I think there's always a place for it. Even if it's isolation on the post, you're throwing it down to Tim Duncan or Akeem or whatever, that's still isolation. It's just from a different part of the court. So yeah, I think there's still a place for it.
Did you feel, Joel, this summer when the Clippers got Lance, Paul, did you wonder if there was still going to be a place for you here, if this would kind of work out still the way it has?
I wasn't sure it would work out like this because when you're trying to win, it's all about sacrifice. You know, so you got Lance, you got Paul, you got Josh, you got Pablo, you got Austin for a whole year now. You know, so you got Cole Aldridge. That's a whole new Wesley Johnson. That's a whole new bench kind of remade, you know. So I talked to Doc, and I knew I pretty much had the same role. I just thought, you know, I would have to sacrifice more. But that's what it's about when you're trying to win. You know, sometimes you have to take a step back. Some teams can take a step forward. And the first part of the season, maybe the first month and a half, I did that. And I took that step back, but it wasn't far benching. It wasn't really clicking, you know. And so after that, Doc, around Christmas, Doc was like, I want you to be more aggressive, you know. And from that point on, I've done that, and then, you know, it's kind of worked in our favor because now everybody has a clear, defined role on our second unit, especially.
So that wasn't even about Blake being out. That was more that he kind of wanted to get back to what you guys have been.
Kind of a combination of both. It was a combination of both because obviously missing Blake, that's 25 points. You know JJ, you know DJ, you know Chris and myself are going to have to be more aggressive. But even before the Blake injury, I remember it, like yesterday, Christmas night, before we knew Blake was hurt, because Blake came up hurt that night. So before it was that game, actually, like, I need you to be more aggressive now. So it kind of went hand in hand with each other.
I mean, you guys have had so much go on since you got here. You know, so many dramas and ups and downs. That Players Tribune story probably could have been a book. Does it ever get tiring? Is it ever exhausting? Or are you able to kind of still lose yourself in the game?
Yeah, I'm still lost in the game, honestly. I love basketball. Just like I did when I was 2 years old, and that's why you'll see me playing in the summer like I do in the NBA. You know, and it's no different from guys getting lost in the game. And what I learned is if you just keep your head down and be professional and only worry about the things you can control, I think that's one of the secrets to success. You know, just focus on things you can control personally and be a professional and go from there.
Does it feel like you guys are kind of approaching a crossroads here because you have been together for so long, or do you think teams can kind of get impatient with all that?
Well, I think you can make points for both, honestly. You know, I think the core group has been together now. It's been 5 years since Chris came, 4 years since I came, 3 years since JJ's came, and Blake and DJ have been here longer than that. You know, so we've been together for a while, and I think if you look at the teams in the 80s, you know, the Celtics with Bird and Mikhail and Parrish and Ainge and Dennis Johnson. And you look at the Lakers with Magic and Kareem and Scott and Worthy. They stay together for a long period of time. You know, even the Spurs, they've been together for a long amount of time. So now with the NBA, you see so much change. I would like to see us stick together for a while, you know, because I feel like we have a really good group. We have a great leader with Doc Rivers. But I understand if, you know, they feel like change has to happen if we don't get to a certain point. That's part of the deal.
It seems like just having a team in the league that's 53-5, it's like everybody's going to feel not good enough. You know, everybody's going to feel like, well, what should we do? But that's kind of a dangerous standard to hold yourself to, isn't it? I mean, it's such an anomaly.
It really is. And you look at San Antonio, I think they're like 49-7.
An afterthought. Yeah.
Yeah, right? And it's crazy. And the good thing about it is, you love to see those teams because they push you, and hopefully, you know, you can push them. If you look at Golden State and San Antonio, we're the team to put them out the playoffs the last 2 years, you know, as far as, and they're the two champions last 2 years, you know, so I don't think we're far away. But once you get to the playoffs, you know, 0-0 and some of the season.
How do you not really age? Because, I mean, is the bench helping in that way, like helping you? Are there things that you do? It just seems like your game hasn't really changed much, whereas other guys at your age have to sort of redefine.
It hasn't. I'm getting a little sick, but I think style of play has helped. I think the way I play, you know, because if you look at it, my game is more built on being crafty and creative and skill set as far as shooting, ball handling, things of that nature. So I think there's always a place for that. I think clean living, no drinking, no smoking, no partying, I think that keeps you fresh, you know, taking care of yourself how you eat, you know, and doing all the things you should with foam rolling and massage and ice tubs. I mean, that helps. And like I said, never getting out of shape. I'm always ahead of the game. Like I'm always ready, so I don't have to try to get ready. You know, I think that piles up injuries when you take off. You know, you can be in shape and then take a week off, and then when you start over, it's like you're starting from ground zero. You know, so I think me always staying in shape, I'm always, you know, ready to go. And then I thank God, honestly. I really do believe that. I think he's kept me healthy for the most part, and just, you know, just good favor as far as you have to have some type of luck as far as not getting injured and things of that nature. So I think all those combinations of things have helped me put time on pause a little bit.
What do you think you'll do when you're done?
I think I'll be around the game for sure. I think I have opportunities and broadcasts and things of that nature, but I would love to be in the front office. Yeah, I love, like I said, I watch basketball all the time, so I would love to help put a team together. And I feel like I know, you know, what it takes to be successful as a group, as a team, as a unit, and just putting talent together. So I would love to be in the front office.
Yeah, I could see you on that TNT set right now. Will you always play, you think? Will you be one of those guys who, even when you're 50, you'll be out there?
Oh, I'll be at LA Fitness still dropping buckets and talking guys over at 50-plus, for sure.
That's great. Hey, Jamal, I really appreciate this, man. It's a pleasure getting to catch up with you and talk about all this stuff.
You as well. I remember you did something on me at Sports Illustrated a few years back at the back page. So thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Nah, Jamal, thanks for doing it. Always a pleasure. Thanks to Jamal Crawford for joining us and everyone out there for listening. If you have any ideas for future guests, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at @SI_LeeJenkins and my producer, Alan, at AlanXKim, and use the hashtag OpenFloor to get in touch with the show. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week in the Open Floor.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.